black thing go from left to right, and I thought, I'm going to die out here. No one's ever going to know.
And I couldn't believe what my eyeballs were showing me. I'll never forget how evil the eyes were. It was horrible. I mean, I've never seen nothing that evil.
It ran towards me at a rate that I can't even explain. Turned and stared at me. And this look of, I just want to kill you. I want to say it was human, but it wasn't.
He was yelling at me to grab a gun, grab a gun. I was like, for what? He said, just grab a gun. And there's footprints all the way to the door of my house. It had went inside my garage all the way to the door.
911, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sharon, see ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
You're listening to Sasquatch Chronicles. Check us out online at sasquatchchronicles.com. If you've had an encounter, email me. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. can I post Sunday's show on Saturday night? Apparently. I guess there's no one here to tell me no. Thanks so much for being here tonight. Does Sasquatch have a language? We will find out tonight. My guests tonight are Ron Moorhead and Scott Nelson. And Ron Moorhead actually in the early 70s recorded what's now known as a Sarah sound. Some people refer to it as a samurai chatter. But he recorded this back in the early 70s. And then I'll also be having Scott Nelson on, who is a cryptolinguist. He served in the Navy as a cryptolinguist, I think, for almost 30 years. And he'll be giving us his take on what we hear tonight. And I'll be playing a lot of sounds for you tonight. I've tried to clean some of it up, some of the background noise, so it sounds better for you guys. So I hope it comes across the way I want it to. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance, check out sasquatchchronicles.com. You can become a member and get additional content, help support the show. Thank you again for being here tonight. What a night. I can't wait to bring Scott and Ron on and to play some sounds for you guys. The Sierra sounds have always creeped me out. Just on a personal note, they've always creeped me out. I always found it to be kind of creepy because it doesn't quite sound like an animal and it doesn't sound human. It sounds very strange. So we'll be talking about some of that tonight. And I also want to mention, if you get a chance, go to ronmoorhead.com and pick up a copy of the Sierra sounds. Very cool CDs, and you get tons of, I think it's an hour and a half of audio. Actually, I think it's more than that. But very, very cool sounds. If you get a chance, ronmoorhead.com. I know Ron just put out a book, The Quantum Bigfoot. It's actually a pretty good read. If you get a chance, check it out. You can get it there on ronmoorhead.com too as well. Very cool book. But let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Ron Moorhead to the show. Ron, how are you tonight?
I'm just fine. Thank you, Wes.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate you being back on, Ron. I know you're a fan favorite. I also want to welcome Scott Nelson to the show. Scott, how are you tonight?
Very well.
And thank you so much for being on. And I really wanted to bring you two guys on. I've been having this idea in my head about doing a show like this about Sasquatch and the possible language. And Ron's been beating it in my head for years saying, they have a language, they have a language, they have a language. And lucky enough, he was patient enough with me to, you know, as I tried to figure out this whole Sasquatch subject. But coming back to the language, I thought, God, I got to have Ron on. I got to have Scott on to talk about it. So thank you both. And Scott, for the audience that may not know about you, if you would kind of give us a background on the whole crypto linguist and your experience with the military in doing this, and then we'll kind of play some sounds and walk into a few things here.
Well, I've spent a career in the Navy as what we call a cryptolinguist, My official title was cryptologic technician interpreter. And what we do, our main job is to go out to tactical platforms and collect the human voice on tape and to copy as much of it as we can live. But what we can't, we record, and then we go back and transcribe it. And we're trying to collect languages that are not actually even our target language. And we're trying to recognize different languages and get those tapes to the people that can use them. As it applies to what we're doing now, the most important thing I did, I spent thousands of hours listening to the human voice on tape and transcribing language that I may not have actually known. I may not have been proficient or fluent in the language that I was transcribing, which makes me perfectly suited for transcribing a completely unknown language, like what we're dealing with here. And I think that's what helped me to recognize that there was language on those tapes. I mean, immediately, was the fact that I'd spent so much time speeding tapes up, slowing tapes down, and to recover the morpheme streams, the phonemes of languages that might not even been a language that I was fluent in.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you got a hold of these. Or I think, you know, Ron's been saying for years, I mean, he's been drilling it in my head, like I said, that there's a language here. And a lot of those Sierra sounds, you know, Scott, when you listen to them, and I think even Ron has probably said this a million times to me, there's definitely a language. You hear them talking back and forth. I can't tell you what they're saying, but there is they are speaking back and forth. And when was the first time you heard those tapes?
Well, it was 2008. I remember it very well. My son was 12 years old. We were sitting in my classroom at the college, and he was doing a project for school. He was writing a report, and he decided he wanted to do it either on, you know, he was a 12-year-old boy, so he wanted to do it either on UFOs, Loch Ness Monster, or Bigfoot. And so I'm on Google, and we're just Googling stuff for his report. And he says, "Dad, what do you think Sasquatches sound like?" And I said, I remembered some B-grade Sasquatch movie from the 70s, and I let out a hoop and a moan, and he goes, which was pretty ridiculous. And Stephen looked at me and says, "Dad, that's not what Sasquatches sound like." So I said, "Well, let's Google it and find out." So I literally Googled Bigfoot sounds. And it immediately took me to the BFRO website where they had some snippets of audio of Ron's tapes, Ron and Al's tapes. I started playing them, and immediately I recognized that there was language there. And it was at real time. Listening to it through the first time, my son said, "Dad, how can you tell that there's language there? Because it sounds like a bunch of apes fighting to me." And I said, "Son, we need to get a hold of these tapes. We need to slow them down like Dad used to do in the Navy. I guarantee you there's language here." So I knew it almost immediately.
For the audience, Ron and Scott, I know Ron's heard it a million times. I'm sure you've heard it a million times too as well. But I get a lot of reports of these things doing what's called a monkey chatter. And, you know, and Ron can attest to me arguing with him whether it's a big dumb ape or it's something else. And, you know, over the years, I think Ron's right. It's not a big dumb ape. It's something else. But a lot of times when you hear the vocalizations, let me play a little clip for you. Very strange. And this one's actually rock clacking and snarling. Let's take a listen. Ron, when you heard that for the first time, how far away from you was those sounds?
Oh, see, that night, I would guess maybe 50 feet or so.
And you weren't thinking, I'm going to get the hell out of here?
Oh, yeah, I had that in mind. Yeah, we had guns, we were inside our shelter, and we had the microphones remoted outside the shelter walls, which are a bunch of deadfall trees leaned up against the cable. And it was exciting. Because you didn't know if they were arguing about which one of you guys are going to eat first, or if they're going to carry you away, or what's going to happen. You don't know if they're going to come in the shelter after you, or you don't know what. But we just sit there patiently, not real patiently, but I mean nervously, I guess, with our guns in our hands, ready to, you know, shoot our way out if we had to. And of course, we didn't know what to think. Really, you don't know, because we weren't none of us up there looking for Bigfoot. It's like something just happened. And it's exciting. Let me back up to 1 minute, though, Wes, if you don't mind, explain something to your listeners. Scott mentioned the morphine stream. That's what sets this apart, is a morphine stream, which is a group of words that make up a cognizant sentence, or I should say a sapient sentence in this case. Is if I'm saying something wrong, Scott, correct me, but these things, we knew they were talking. We knew they were conferring with each other. But until you have an expert like Scott listen to them and declare, you know, with his credentials, declare that it is a language by the human definition of language, and that's what separates it from animals, is it has a morphine stream. And until you get somebody like that to say it's a language, you can't just go tell everybody where they speak to you, or you can tell that, but they're not going to believe you. I didn't know a man like Scott existed. I didn't even know until he found us, Al Berry and myself, and came out and talked with us. But anyway, I just wanted to clarify that just a little bit, because it mm-hmm. makes a big difference. It's not just two animals communicating. Sure. It's two animals communicating, or two entities communicating with each other in a language by the human definition of language, which I think is critically important. Because only humans are supposed to have language as we have it, with wisdom and thought behind it. And from my experience with these things years ago, they are clever. They have definition behind their moves. They know what they're doing. We underestimated the heck out of them, as I've told you a lot of times. So I don't want to take up all the time here, but it's just good. But prior to that, Al Berry had engaged Professor Curlin to study those sounds. He did a year-long study. This is a professor. And he did at the University of Wyoming. He did the study and said these tapes are real. That's what's important, because a lot of people send sounds to Scott that haven't been studied by anybody professional, by an engineer, to see if there wasn't a 60-cycle hum in them, which would have shown pre-recording or re-recording. But Professor Curlin made the statement that they showed no sign of speeded up or slowed down or manipulated in any way. He even gave the actual size of the vocal mechanism, which would compare to a man's, and how big this one was that he studied that one sound on. But I just want to clarify that a little bit, because I think it's good for your listeners to understand what we're saying when we say they got language. The ones we dealt with in the Sierras have language. I don't know that they're all the same. I want to put that out there, because I don't know that all of them can speak. There's a lot of them. A lot of people say they hear sounds just like we recorded, but you know, they don't have them recorded.
Few people do, but a lot, you're right, Ron, when people listen to it, and I've played a lot for people off the air, and I'll say, is this what you heard? And they'll go, that's exactly what I heard. Say monkey chatter. But when you listen to that recording, and I hope you don't take offense to it, but it sounds like two monkeys arguing over a banana. And that's kind of what I hear, you know, but yeah. What you're saying with the morphine stream, so we're on the same page, is it's a difference between you and I and Scott talking right now. And chipmunks communicating back and forth. It's not necessarily language, but it's beyond just communicating, I guess is what you're trying to say with that.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say, is monkeys, apes don't communicate like this, like these things do.
No.
And, yeah, that's what we're saying.
Right. They don't have the apparatus to communicate with the
the articulations that are on the Barrymore head tapes.
Yeah,
they simply do not have the same apparatus. But whatever this creature is on the Barrymore head tapes is articulating with the same apparatus that human beings have, except maybe four times larger.
Let me ask you a question, Scott. Regarding when you first heard that, what did you think that was linked? Because when you listen to some, and I'll play another clip later on where you hear Ron, and I think it's one of their brothers, Ron, you probably correct me if I'm wrong, but then they're talking, and it's obvious that these creatures are not only, I mean, Ron even says it at the time, but you know, just listening to it, they're talking to each other, and then they try and talk to Ron, and Ron mimics him. But before we jump into that, when you heard this recording, what did you think? I mean, did you still think it was language?
Oh, I knew immediately that there were language articulations there. As I say, when I present my study at different conferences, just like this last weekend in Denver, I knew three things immediately. One, that it was not a human being. And no, I'm not a sound specialist like Dr. Curlin. He had already established that, which I didn't know at the time. So I'm going only on professional experience. I knew immediately that it was not a human being because he was making sounds that were way above the ability of humans and way below. The second thing I knew immediately is that it was an articulated language by the human definition of it. We're not talking about like coyotes having some form of communication. You know, I mean, hell, dogs can do that. Other species can do, communicate, but they don't have language by the human definition of it. But immediately, that was one of the things that I knew. And the third thing was that from my professional experience, I knew also that it could not have been faked. I had been trained in the best deception techniques in the world at that time, which were the Russians. And there was no way that even the Russians could have done it. They certainly could not have done it in 1972 and 1974. So those were the three conclusions that I knew to be true even before I got up from my desk that day.
Let me say one thing. Most of us know who John Green was, or he's an iconic figure in the Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. He interviewed Albert Ostman, which supposedly was kidnapped up in Toba Inlet in Canada, and he was held captive for 6 days, I think. And he mentioned in his interview about these things chattering amongst themselves, and they were talking back and forth. And that's 1924 stuff, and yet you're still hearing it today. So that's kind of a good piece of evidence that I think a lot of researchers are ignoring. Maybe not, but. I've been up in the Toba Inlet. I've researched that whole story quite a bit. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there because Albert Ostman said they were chattering amongst themselves, and John Green wrote that in his book, The Apes Among Us.
I'll tell you, chatter, the word chatter, and we hear this a lot from witnesses, the word chatter itself, by definition, requires language. So, by the way, it does gibberish. If someone says, how do you know? I mean, I get this all the time. How do you know it's not gibberish? Well, if it's gibberish, it also requires language. Because
is that
gibberish
by the human
are
that
morpheme streams that are put together that have no meaning. You must first understand that articulated phonemes and morphemes have meaning, and therefore you must already have language, have the ability for language, before you can produce gibberish. Whether it's gibberish or chatter or whatever you want to call it, it's still language.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point that you bring up there, Scott, because I interview a ton of witnesses, and I've interviewed a ton of witnesses, and sometimes they will say, like the clip I just played for you guys, they'll say, that was it. That's what I heard. It was very close to that. It's a real quick, and it's been called samurai chatter. It's been called monkey chatter. It's and people will say, that's what I heard. But the interesting part with regard to language, what you just said regarding gibberish, I've talked to a lot of witnesses where they will, and I'll play another clip here for you in a moment, but people will hear this gibberish And they will say two creatures were talking back and forth. And I'll say, how do you know they were talking back and forth? And they'll say, well, it's almost like one said something and there's a pause and then a different voice, the other one says something back. But the witnesses will say it's gibberish. It doesn't make any sense what they said. You know, it's no language they've ever heard.
It's natural for them to say that because they simply don't understand it. So it sounds like gibberish to them.
Right. Yeah.
Hell, I could speak Spanish quick enough and you would call it gibberish.
Yeah. Well, I've heard people in Louisiana speak English and it sounds like gibberish to me. forgive me to the listeners
That's
in Louisiana.
Right.
No, but you hear this a lot, especially with witnesses. Let me play this second clip for you guys.
In for a night view.
I love the part where Ron just responds back. I think I'd be in the shelter holding onto my gun if I would have heard that.
What was so unique about that, Wes, was that was one of the first times I ever really responded or played with us while we were outside. I say play with us because that's what I think they're doing.
Yeah.
While we were outside the shelter, Bill and I, just the two of us, were up there. And we were by the stove fixing our dinner, and I write about this in my first book, Voices in the Wilderness, but we had activity just right as soon as it got dusk. We started hearing pounding on rocks and breaking limbs and stuff. And before, they wouldn't do that until we were inside, the whooping and all that. Then they began, and like I tell people, if you just ignore them, they start coming closer. Don't get up and jump around and shine your flashlights. That'll get rid of them quick. But anyway, I didn't. We didn't. We just kept doing what we was doing. And first thing you know, they start, I thought, asking me something. So I got up and yelled back at them and mimicked them. And they thought, I think they thought that was funny because it sounds funny.
Can I say something
now
about that?
Sure. Absolutely.
Can I say something about that? And this is one of the big differences between the Berry tape and the Moorhead tape. Is the Berry tape, they are all speaking at such a prosody or a rate of deliverance that is way too fast for humans to even recognize it as language. But on the Moorhead tape, when Ron is up there, I feel, and after discussing this with Ron many times, he feels the same thing, that they were actually trying to slow their articulations down, as if they were actually trying to communicate with Ron and Bill. And people ask me, well, how do you know it's not mimicry? I say, well, because the only creature doing any mimicry is Ron. Ron's trying to mimic the creatures in that cut that you just played. So that you will hear, they are actually trying to purposely slow their articulations down. Now, I believe in an attempt for Ron and Bill to understand them. They were trying to communicate.
I wish somebody could tell me what they were trying to say or what they were saying that I couldn't understand. That's something I've been wanting to know for 40-some-odd years now. I still don't know what they were asking me. But I'm going to get up there again, and I think I got some unfinished business up there. I haven't heard that chatter since 2011, and that's when I heard some, the last time I heard it. And so they're still around. The same family group. I don't know if it's the same ones, but the same family group seems to still be up there. And actually, I was up there last year, but didn't hear any chatter. But I did see something strange. So I guess that's not what the subject is about tonight.
No, and we can talk about that. Remind me, Ron, I definitely want to hear about that. But, one of the things I think is kind of hilarious, and you'll both get a kick out of it, but I'm sure Scott will think it's funnier, is, we do that as humans, really. I remember a guy came up to Woody and I, and he was speaking, I think it was Spanish, and Woody started slowing down what he was saying in English. And I just looked at him. I said, it doesn't matter how fast you speak English, he's not going to understand what you're saying. And it's kind of, it's kind of that same impression that you get with these things. Scott, do you have any impression on what you think they were trying to say?
What we're dealing with is what it's actually been dealt with in philosophy and psycholinguistics, specifically by Dr. Willard Quine, a linguist and philosopher who over 60-some-odd years ago, wrote a paper on what would happen if we ever discovered a language that was entirely unknown and entirely unrelated to any other human language. How would we translate it? He called it radical translation. So that's really what we're doing for the first time, probably in history, trying to understand what they're saying. It's all guesswork as far as the actual translation. And that's what people mistake a lot of times. When I say that I'm transcribing it, they think that I'm translating it. It's a completely different thing.
Gotcha.
But we don't have to know what they're saying in order to prove that they are using language.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
In order to actually get an accurate translation, like I've told Ron many times, is that you'd have to sit down with a Sasquatch and say, exactly what did you mean by this articulation? Did you mean tree or water or human or exactly what?
in order to actually translate a completely unknown language, that's what would be required. Other than that, it's kind of all guesswork. We know that on the Barry tape, they were excited. The big male was, he gets mad. He tries to frighten the hunters. We know that the female, we feel it, actually. We feel that the female was arguing with the male at one point.
Yeah, and she goes,
guesswork as far as the actual translation.
Are you talking about the part in the recording? I'll see if I can't play it here.
There's two of them across the creek at the big rocks.
That part where you hear that da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, he says something back to her, but she almost speeds up the way she talks.
Yes. There's several places where it does that. And remember that we have 90 minutes. We have 90 minutes. With the Barry and the Moorhead tape combined, we have almost 90 minutes. It took me 4 months to transcribe it before I even went out to California to meet with Ron and Al, and I had 75 pages of transcripts.
You know, between all of us, because there are six hunters up there, including Al Barry, who wasn't a hunter, actually, but we were all taping these things and in 72, 73, 74, and it's like there's more than 90 minutes. It's just 90 minutes is what Scott got, because those are the best moments of one night when Al Barry had his microphone up the ridge to about 40 feet remoted. But we were all taping them, and we've got hours and hours and hours of these sounds, but they just don't have the quality. They have the quality of like the second one that you heard where I was mimicking them, because but I did have a real quality tape recorder which burned up my house fire, and all my original tapes, which were really excellent quality. There were stereo microphones out each side of our shelter, and all those tapes got burned up in my house fire. And I'm just lucky I saved these ones from 74. I had copied them already and sent them off to Al, so I got them back and was able to produce the second CD.
Ron, I wanted to ask you, that night, you know, what I hear, here's my impression when I listen to the tape, and I love to get your impression and Scott's impression of what was going on there, but it almost sounded like there was a younger male, and I don't know if he was making fun of you guys, or it kind of sounds like he was kind of... hey, watch me. I'm going to make a sound, and then these guys up on the ridge are going to copy it. And then it sounded like there was a really young one, and then the male, he kind of sounded like he was trying to talk to you, Ron, and that whole that was my impression, like he was trying to say something to you. He was trying to that's just the impression I get. I wasn't there, but you listen to the recordings, and that's kind of what I walk away from.
Wes?
Yeah.
If I may say...
Of course.
Wes, your impression is as valid as ours.
Well, let's not go that far.
you simply don't know. I mean, Ron, of course, is the most valid because he was actually there at the time.
I kind of know where they were.
What he's always told me is exactly what I said, is that they're trying to talk. They're trying to communicate with Ron. Whether they're making fun of him or not, they were trying to communicate.
And we feel like there was a female, a male, and a young adolescent at one point in 74. In fact, I've got the little voice. It's on my CD that comes with my book. And it's you can hear what I feel like is the female coming down on the little one, the young one, which I think is getting bold. But we've heard that sound up there before, the little young squeaky voice. And then you hear the big male, and that's the samurai male. He's the one that goes, ooh, it's all that heavy voice. Yelling down at them, maybe, because I kind of think and get the feeling, and this is all feeling because you don't know what they're thinking, but that maybe the young males are curious and coming in kind of close, and maybe you got the big daddy said, don't do that. We're not supposed to interfere with these people. But they were interfering with us. They were there and interacting with us, which was I had no idea it would ever evolve into something like this 40-some-odd years later. We were just having fun with it.
I think it's one of the most important recordings that we have of these things. And there's a ton of people off the air. Like if you and I, you know this already, Ron, but there's a ton of people out there, and I'll play it for them, especially that real quick chatter, the first recording. And I'll say, is that what you heard? And they'll say, you know what, that's pretty close. But it's usually them talking back and forth. I don't know that I've ever interviewed someone where they said it was trying to talk to them. But no one was in a – I don't think I've talked to anyone that was in a situation like you or Ron where you guys were in the middle of nowhere for weeks at a time either. I wanted to ask you both a question. I guess I'll start with Scott. Scott, don't you find it interesting, though, that these things have a language? I guess we all can agree on that. And then they also have very animalistic type sounds. You'll hear them roar. I'm sure you've heard it before. Or scream. Mm-hmm. Or you know, do more animalistic type sounds. And don't you find that a little strange that they – don't you find that strange that they'll do the – they'll have this chatter, this language, and also be very animalistic too?
It's certainly strange to us humans. It's something that, you know, we don't understand. But it's easy to understand why they would do it for the purpose of deception. Now Ron and I – both have experienced sounds up there that were not even animalistic. We've heard sounds up there that were almost mechanistic, metallic. We've heard sounds like cowbells, very clearly. Things like, Ron's heard things that are very electronic. Weird, I mean, stuff that are, go beyond weird. So, and the community as a whole has pretty much concluded that these creatures can mimic virtually any sound.
Now,
I've heard them, I've been out in the woods. I've heard them do owls, and but owls, and I mean 800-pound owls, and there's three of them, you know, mimicking the human owl sound. It's just it's unbelievable their ability to mimic any kind of sound.
Well, the range, the range that Dr. Curlin shows on his graph and in the book Mind Like Monsters on Trial, he shows their vocal ability pretty much on a graph, you know, the sounds that he took out and put on a graph and how they compare to a human. Mm-hmm. And they go way above, inside, and way below what we can do, which shows me and tells me their vocal mechanism is much superior to ours, and they probably have the ability to mimic just about anything. What they can't deceive you with is their amplitude. The power in which it comes out is unbelievable. It just it'll jar you when you hear it. But anyway, we also had another sound expert years ago, Nancy Logan, who chimed in on this, and she said, whoever did this just wasn't human. It couldn't, you know, humans can't do this. The rapid speed articulation, the range in which they have, and but you put all that together, and you've got a lot of information here coming out of the emotions that these things portray with their sounds, and you got this still this mentality of a lot of researchers out there that think they're looking for an ape in the woods, and they're more than that, and I just like to get that point across. They're not just an ape running around the woods. And anyway, just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, I think when you listen to the recordings, I think it's pretty obvious. There's a lot of times where they sound very animalistic, and they do a lot of animalistic things. But then there's other times too where you can make an argument to where they do that seems very human-like. And the sounds, you know, if you listen to that second recording. It sounds like, you know, I don't know, Russian, Sumerian, sounds like people talking. You know, I don't necessarily say I'd listen to that and go, well, it's an animal. I'd probably listen to that and go, I don't know what that is. You know, let's say Sasquatch aside, it's hard to place what that is. You know, if you don't believe in Bigfoot, well, what is this in? Have you looked into
there's,
or go ahead, Scott.
I'm just going to say that there's sections of the Berry tape, especially, where they almost all of their articulations are essentially twice as fast as those of humans' ability. Where when you slow some of those down and they to approximately 50% of real time, and they sound very human.
Well, not that you won't understand the language, but you can. I don't think
I've had people tell me, and you'll. I've never had anybody come back and say, "Oh." That does not sound human.
Yeah, and I'll have to slow down and listen to it. I know on the other time when the creatures were slowing down, it does sound human-like. There's a gentleman, I wanted to get both of your opinions on this. He contacted me, and he said it was an Arcadian proto-language. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said it's kind of where all languages come from. It originates from the Middle East. And he started doing different phrases that they do that, you know, kind of sounded like what Ron has on his tapes. Obviously, it's a human doing it. Yeah. But and he was telling me different phrases. But I wanted to ask you, have you looked into other languages or possibility where this language came from?
Of course. Of course. But so the problem with that is virtually everyone you play the tapes for, and I've played the tapes for, I mean, at real time and slowed them down for everyone from colleagues who were native Japanese speakers to Persian to Russian to Native American. And the problem with that is that no matter who it is that's listening to it, picks up bits and pieces that they recognize as part of their own language. Okay, this is a phenomenon called pareidolia, where people recognize and they essentially create order out of essentially random data, random phenomena, and they're picking out bits and pieces that make sense to them, and they're saying, "Oh my God, they're speaking Cherokee," when there's no, you know, real evidence that they're speaking Cherokee. They might have morphemes or phonemes that sound exactly like English or Spanish or Cherokee or Persian or Russian or Akkadian, but there's no way we can, you know, take a language as a whole and say, oh, they're speaking ancient Akkadian. That's impossible. First of all, Akkadian is a dead language. We don't even know what it actually sounded like.
I gotcha.
I had somebody listen to these tapes, 1995, I think it was, on a program I was with, and he called in and said, listen to this part right here. They're saying, you are not welcome. They slowed it down, and that's what it sounded like. You are not welcome. So automatically they think, well, these things are telling you you're not welcome there. Well, this is what Scott just
right.
saying.
And therefore, they speak the King's English, right?
Yeah, so, right, exactly.
You can't say that.
Yeah. No, I get you. And you see people even do that with, I know Ron has a pirating problem just like I do, but people on Facebook, or not on Facebook, on YouTube, they'll say it saying this, here's the phrase. And if you listen to it, you're like, yeah, it does kind of sound like that's what it's saying. But I get what you're saying, Scott. It, you know, every language, you know, I can even hear German and think I understand what they're talking about, even though I have no clue what they're talking about. But, you know, I might hear pie. I'm probably thinking of pie at the time, but, you know, I might hear pie from like a German, even though that has nothing to do with what they were talking about. So I kind of understand what we're going with that. What did you think of that area up there, Scott? I know you've been up there with Ron to the Sierra camp. What was your opinion of it?
It's very strange. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life, but strangely, it has a different feel to it, and Ron will back me up on this. Once you get up there, you can actually feel the difference when they're around and when they're not. I know that sounds paranormal.
No, it doesn't.
Sometimes we don't like to go there.
I know exactly what you mean.
There's been times up there when me and Ron would sit down, drop our backpacks, and go, man, there's nothing going to happen this time. And then there's been times we drop our backpacks and almost immediately weird stuff starts happening. So it's a very beautiful, undeniably beautiful, but a very, very strange place.
It's amazing how your senses kick in up there. All of them. One night we were sleeping in the tent that we set up. We weren't at the Sierra camp yet. I didn't trust God enough to take him clear over there, so we camped out somewhere else, set up a tent. And it's probably maybe a half a mile from where the actual camp was, but He didn't know that at the time. Anyway, it was one of our first trips in. But we were laying there, and you know, about 1 o'clock in the morning, I heard this chatter right behind our tent. And it was a chatter. It was a Bigfoot chatter. It was, I got the feeling. Now, I don't like to say feeling because that sounds unscientific, but it's a feeling that we have, all of us have, and we just open up. It seems like that can come to you when your vibrational frequency is lower down during the evening time. And that's what it was during the night. And Scott was asleep. I was laying there with my tape recorder in my hand and my sleeping bag, and I heard this chatter. And the feeling I got was it was a young one talking to her mother across the creek. And I punched Scott because I knew he was sitting there waiting for some kind of cooperative sounds to come up. And finally, when I woke him up, the chatter was over with. And my tape recorder wasn't working then anyway, because otherwise I would have recorded it. But that's what happens, too. Batteries go dead up there quite often. Mm-hmm. One of the other strange things. Yeah. Metallic sounds.
From my experience, what happens up there, and for a long time, me and Ron didn't even want to talk about it because it was just too weird and paranormal. But when you have the feeling that they're around, and me and Ron took up such a redundancy of batteries, brand new packs of batteries up there for our tape recorders and at the beginning for Ron's video recorder. But whenever you had the feeling that they were around, you would put those batteries in and you could almost watch the battery indicator go down. You could almost watch them drain. They almost immediately drained the batteries out of whatever it is we put them in. And it got so bad, Ron decided after the first two or three times, he wasn't even going to take his video recorder up there because it was useless. At times when we'd be up there and, you know, me and Ron would look at each other after we drop our packs and go, man, I don't feel a thing. But we would put those batteries in our, you know, in my little Zoom recorder, and they'd last for 4 days, 24 hours a day. Recording for 4 days and not a thing. Not a thing on him.
Well, Al Berry talks about that.
It's so weird.
The first CD, he blamed the weather being so cold that it stopped his recorder from working. I reflect back on that and wonder if that's really what it was. Because in 2011, when I had my last real encounter where I heard them chattering and had one of them walk around the little tent I was in, I had brand new lithium batteries that I'd put in my recorder, brand new ones. I'd take them out of the package and put them in that evening, and they were deader than a doornail when this thing started going on at 10 o'clock that night. And how do you explain that? I think there's something going on with these things that requires energy, or they can zap the energy, or something's going on with energy and them, and I don't know what it is, but that's not unusual for that to happen.
No, it's not. And I've had other people tell me that too as well. I've experienced it one time when I was out there and I didn't have an answer for it, so I didn't really go any farther than that. But the feeling that they're around is very odd to me, very strange, because I know exactly what you mean. And when you go into an area, you can almost kind of tell if they're in the area or not. And that sounds very crazy to someone who's never had an encounter. It sounds very odd. But I've talked to so many researchers privately, and they'll say the same thing. Absolutely, you can feel when they're around. And I know you got a different take on it, Ron, with the Quantum Bigfoot, which I highly recommend for the audience. Go buy the Quantum Bigfoot. Excellent book. But what's your take on that, Scott? What do you think causes that when they're around, that feeling of just knowing?
I don't know, Wes. You know, before... I mean, I had hints of it from what Ron and Al had told me before I ever went up there. And I was the same as every other skeptic would have been because, you know, I'm the first guy to tell you that I'm not a Bigfoot guy. I'm just a language guy. So when I first went up there, I was as skeptical as Al was when he first went up there. Just being up there with Ron, it changes everything. It changes everything about your worldview. And after being out there so many times and after all these years with Ron, there's only one conclusion that me and Ron can draw, and we'll both agree on this. There's way more going on here than any of us ever expected.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
And like you said, you don't get it until you get up there and experience for yourself.
That's so true.
And it was so weird. I mean, for the first few years, it was so weird that me and Ron had decided we're not going to talk about some of the stuff. But then it just got to be to the point to where Ron, you know, we can't,
I just come out
we
with
cannot
it.
Not, we can't talk. We cannot not talk about it now. We have to just be honest about the stuff we've experienced up there if we're going to get to the bottom of any of this.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's, I think Ron's the one who came up with the term many years back, because I always thought that they were apes. I always thought they were some overgrown monkey. And that's what I thought, you know, and, you know, I had seen him before and I, in my mind, I'd seen an overgrown ape. It wasn't, you know, and I wouldn't listen to anyone that said anything different. I just wouldn't hear it. Because I knew what I saw. Mm-hmm. I knew what I, you know, I knew it all. And Ron was the first one that said, you know, Wes, it's very disingenuous of you, not to, and he does it in his normal Ron Moorhead, real nice, you know, Ron could call you an idiot, but he, you know, you ended up thanking him at the end because he's so nice about it. But you know, and he was right. He was 110% right.
Yeah.
You know, and there is something more going on here than I think most people realize, or most people want to admit. There's a lot of people that experience a battery. There's a lot of people that experience the lights. There's a lot of people that experience the language. And most of people don't talk about it. They kind of just sweep it under the rug, and but it's not going away. There's so many odd things that go on with these creatures. It's hard to know, you know. And that's why I enjoyed the. Or go ahead.
I think it's time people are starting to step up and realize that we have to be honest about it, and just tell the truth. Just tell the truth about what's going on. This conference that I just spoke at this last weekend in Denver that Ron was unable to make it to, that's really what it was all about, people getting up and just telling the truth from all these different genres, realizing that there's something going on here that's more than the sum of the total. And it's just time for people to be honest and step up and tell the truth about it.
Well, the truth is they know it. Yeah, some people have their own reality.
Yeah, exactly.
And in fact, we all develop our reality, and we all have our own independent reality. We see things differently. And I don't degrade anybody for saying anything if it's their reality. What gets me is if they're not telling me the truth, but you can generally sense that. Yeah. But we all have developed our reality from our birth, and how we see something is going to be different necessarily than how other people might see it. So, therefore, I get a lot of reports of all kinds of weird stuff coming in at me all the time. But I don't ignore it. I used to. I got to be honest with you. I thought there were an ape out there, too, just kind of unique, a relic hominid of some type that's running around here. But after all these years of research, and it's been since 71 when I first encountered them, they are much more than that. I've been all over the world researching the enigmas associated with the sightings and different things that's gone on, and I've seen some interesting stuff. The most interesting stuff was hybrids down in Peru.
Yeah, I know. We did a show on it. That was interesting, actually, that, you know, that they're not human. You know, just off that, Ron, as you and I mentioned on that show, I mean, that's one topic. Now, tell me you know everything going on this planet. You don't.
No, you don't.
You have no clue what's going on this planet. And I think if people really knew the truth, I think people would go crazy. I really think people would go nuts if they knew the truth on what actually is going on with some of these cryptids and what people are seeing and experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you, and I want to come back to your newest encounter, Ron. I got to hear it. But I wanted to ask you, Scott, what do you think Sasquatch is? If someone were to ask you, Scott, what do you think Sasquatch is? What would you say to them? And there's no wrong answer, of course.
You're asking me that?
Yes, sir.
Yes, he is, Scott. You're on the platform now.
You're asking me what? Well, not being a Bigfoot guy, even though, yes, over the years I've had to sort of become a Bigfoot guy. you're going to get an arbitrary definition from me.
That's all right.
But I have to believe that they are a form of human. If we are going to define them by the same standards that we define ourselves, it's language. It's language that gives us that appellation of sapien, homo sapien. It is language that separates us from all of the other homo genres out there, and certainly from animals. If they have language, which obviously whatever it is that we've got taped up there has a language, then they are sentient beings, not just intelligent, but sentient, meaning that they are self-aware and and they're just like us.
A little bigger.
At least as far as, I mean...
No, I gotcha. You're, it's like
the way their brain works.
Yeah, it's kind of the old argument, what makes us human? And I guess you answered it right there. It's language, being able to communicate back and forth with each other. And
if we're going to define them by the same standards that we define ourselves, then yes, they are sentient creatures. Other than that, I don't know what to tell you what they are.
I think that's why when they do a DNA study and they find the mitochondria, the maternal side, is human, they automatically think, well, it's got to be contaminated then, because, well, you know, if it's mitochondrial is the maternal side, well, that shows you that they are part human. And you wonder just how many times maybe that they've crossbred or inbred with other humans in eons past and caused some of them to be more diluted, more human-like than others. Because what we encountered up there was huge. I mean, we're talking a little bit different than what most people say they're seeing, which tells me that there's different types of them. Because I'm not hearing the other people, most of the screams and yells you hear, I think are them communicating back and forth without giving away that they have a language. That's what Scott said earlier. I think that's a way that they have of talking to each other without actually talking. In other words, there are two people up on the trail, you might hear two wood knocks, or one of them singling to the other one, hey, there's two people coming up the trail. That's just my theory, but anyway, I'm getting carried away talking.
No, I don't think so at all, Ron. I think you're probably right on there. You know, it's
I think they're hybrids. They are hybrids. I think their mitochondrial is going to show human every time they find one, because it comes from the maternal side, and they are definitely look like humans in the face. It's their big bodies and their hairy look that throws everybody into the ape camp. And that's where they stay until they have an experience that just they can't explain. And that's what I tell people. Until you've had your experience, you're never going to get out of that camp unless you just open your minds up to some of this other stuff that's out there. And
well, I think the biggest thing that opened my mind was listening to other people and be willing to listen to other people. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's exactly right, Wes. If you can't listen, yeah. That's why we have two ears and one mouth.
Yeah, that's true. And I think once you do that, you start to figure out really quick, you know, it's, I don't want to make the show about me, but I, you know, my opinion on them was kill them all, let God figure it out. I thought they were all monsters. And Ron, and for the audience out there, and Scott probably knows this, Ron's a hard man to argue with. Like, I've tried to argue with Ron, and Ron always ends up, here's the way he argues. Yeah, you could be right. You could be right. And so when he says that, you have nothing. I mean, there's nothing you can go and come back and go, well, wait a minute. You know what I mean? And it's funny because I've adopted that same thing from Ron. When someone says something and I disagree with it, I go, well, you could be right. You know, no one really knows. You could be right. And at that point, there's no more argument. There's nowhere for someone to go. But I wanted to, Ron, tell us about the weird thing that happened to you. I got to hear it.
Oh, this last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I took Carrie up there. She's my beloved, I'm going to call her my wife. And her and I went up there with another gentleman that I took in just to help. And that evening, very first evening, now keep in mind, rarely does anything happen when a new person goes up there, which not that many of them have been up there. But this guy was new. A friend of mine who I trusted, and I knew him well, and it's just last minute deal, and Carrie, which is whom I trust. Well, we got up there, and that evening we set up a tent because the shelter's been taken down. It was taken down in 2015. It had to be taken down. All the stuff that we had packed in up there for the Armageddon had been hauled off with mules. So. But anyway, I seen, you know, just to the south of the old shelter area where we'd set up our tent, there's a big ridge there, but probably 30, 40 yards off there. Here comes this elongated, tubular-looking light floating through the trees. Controlled, definitely controlled, moving through the trees. Now, it was below the ridge line, so it couldn't have been an aircraft of any kind. Plus, it wasn't blinking anyway, but whatever it was very strange. And I punched Carrie. I said, I didn't punch her, but I said, hey, look at this. And we both watched it. We was inside the tent, but the fly was off because it was a nice night. So we was watching this thing go by us. And tell you the truth, I didn't know what to expect because I didn't have a big weapon with me. Not that that would have mattered, but it makes you feel better. And it went on. We watched it for several seconds, so it went all the way down to pretty much east. Scott, you know where the latrine or the toilet is down there where we dug a hole? That's where it went. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if it was going to come up back up to the tent or if it was going to go away, but it went away. But Carrie and this other gentleman, after that, got up and he didn't see it. He was looking the other way in his hammock, which was just a few feet away from ours, where we were. But they heard tree knocks, several of them, right after that. And then about midnight that night, he told us the next morning, he saw this, he thought a hiker coming in on the trail with a headlamp on. And you know where those rocks are up above the big aspen area there, yes. Scott? And he said that's where it was. It was walking right down towards our camp right there. I expected somebody to come walking in any time. And I told him, there's no trail up there. That's not how you get here. You can't even walk up in there in those rocks. And he said, you've got to be kidding. So he went up there looking. He went up there looking all over those rocks trying to find a track or trail of any kind that he could say was
nothing. He didn't go up there at night.
No. He went up there next day when we started talking about next morning.
Yeah. Okay.
Looking for some kind of a sign of somebody coming in. I explained to him the theory that there, not a theory, it's actual biological thing that can happen, is cones coming out of your eyes. If you can collect enough light, some eyes will reflect a cone when you want them to. That happens in young children a lot, but they grow out of it real quick. And I've actually heard a report of a man who saw this Bigfoot. It was an actual Bigfoot he saw that had cones coming out of his eyes. He was looking at the trail as he's walking. And it sounded very credible when I read it. It was on the BFRO site a few years back. So I told this gentleman that was with us about that, and he said, oh, man, I can't, no. But, you know, some people have what I call a cognitive dissonance. It's where new information comes in, and you can't explain it, so you don't accept it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Anyway, I'm sure that puzzles him even today, but it happened. So something's going on. If we could have stayed up there longer, which we couldn't, but if we could have, I think something else could have taken place. But that's what happened, this light. Now, it's not the first time we've had light, so it's, and for that camp, it's not that unusual. But it's unusual for most people to see something like that.
Yeah,
the UFO with little bitty things in it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing
very it. Very strange.
It is very, very strange, you know, and I get a lot of reports like that. I get reports all the way up to, you know, the size of a small Volkswagen, people seeing these lights, and there's really no explanation for the lights at all. One question I wanted to ask you guys, and I want to get your – your real opinion, Ron, instead of you could be right. But, you know, in a lot of demonic encounters, I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this. I won't go into it, but I've experienced it on two different occasions. But one is when I went into a home and there was stuff going on. I didn't know what was going on at the time. But the moment I walked in to this home, I could feel something else was there. This is going to sound completely nuts to probably you guys and probably most of the listeners listening, but I felt like I was being watched and I felt like a heavy presence, almost like something bad was about to happen. Couldn't put my finger on it, couldn't really explain it. It wasn't until later I found out what was going on in the home. But that same feeling is very identical to the same feeling you get when these things are around. Do you guys know where I'm going with that? It's absolutely the same type of feeling. What are your thoughts on that?
Who do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
Go ahead, Scott.
Go ahead, Ron.
Well, in my book, The Quantum Bigfoot, I have a whole chapter on the pineal gland. And I think when you have decalcified that, which we have calcified, it's had all the attributes of an eyeball, by the way, except the actual eye itself. It's all those who study the pineal gland call it the third eye. It's the eye of Horus, which the Egyptians have displayed countless times on their glyphs, whatever it's called. And anyway, I think if you can sense things through that, because we, you know, for those who haven't read my Quantum Bigfoot book, I've sold several hundred of them already, and they're just really going well. But it explains some of these enigmas associated with these things. The feelings that we have are feelings we're born with. That's the image of God we're made in. And we were made to be able to communicate with, so that's how telepathy goes on. That's how all this stuff happens. Mind speak is just quantum entanglement. Just about all animals have that. We have that. We just think we're separated. But we are one energy, and we can communicate with each other that way. We can sense other presence. You can sense evil. You can sense good. And what you were sensing probably was evil. And there is evil entities out there in other dimensions. And I don't know if you want to really get into all this right now on this program. But there are other dimensions according to quantum physics. And the math in quantum physics, what's just quantum theory? Well, no, quantum theory has to be disproved by mathematics like it was proven by mathematics. Otherwise, it's considered acceptable. Until someone can disprove the math in quantum physics, it's still called quantum theory because you can never reproduce it with a visual three-dimensional world we live in. So I kind of get carried away with this stuff because I'm passionate about it. It's really good stuff. Uh-huh. People just need to know that there's more going on than what their three-dimensional eyes can witness. There is presences. That's a good word, presences. Other presence existing in these dimensions that we don't see with our eyes, but you can sense them. With a clean pineal gland, you'll get more of that going on. And there's ways to decalcify that. Our diets and everything else is messing with it right now. So eat non-GMO, get the organic stuff. That's what we do. So I'm trying. Maybe I'll be able to walk on water one of these days. I don't know.
Yeah, no, and you're right. There was something to it because later I found out. I mean, I won't go into it, but later I found out what was going on in that house. And, you know, my gut was right. I don't know if it was a gut feeling. It felt more than just a gut feeling. What's your take, Scott?
Well, I can't say that I've felt anything that you could classify as evil necessarily or demonic. I have felt utter fear and dread several times, and not just up on that mountain, elsewhere where I've been out researching, and I know that they were around because of other things that were happening. But at this point, so many strange, what we used to classify as paranormal, so many of those things have happened to us over the years that I simply cannot discount anything anymore. So when you say that you have felt this, when Ron says he felt that, there's no way that I would be the one to say, oh, that's impossible. That's just not real. And to me, what we used to call paranormal is now just simply, we have to accept it as, it's just simply something, in other words, something we used to call supernatural is simply something, it's part of nature that we simply don't understand.
Very good. Well said.
That's all it is. It's all part of nature, whether it be good or bad or indifferent, whatever. It's just something that we don't understand, and therefore we will classify it as paranormal or supernatural. But I can't discount anything anymore.
For those that think they know, I'd like for them to explain the end of the universe to me, and then I'll get with them. And just tell me what ends it, where it ends, how it ends. You know, when you can only go so far with this brain we've got, you have to conceive it with your mind, conceive it within. And once you conceive it, you've got to go with spirituality. And to me, quantum physics and spirituality are on the same level. You got people in churches talking about heavens and all that stuff. And then you got quantum physics talking about dimensions. Well, there's no difference in my mind. There's a lot of things that well, some people who read the Bible, Christ did miracles. You look at the miracle of how he did them and how other people are doing miracles. They're using the laws in quantum physics, which exists throughout the universe. Quantum physics takes over, and Einstein, Bohr, and these different people established quantum physics years and years ago, 100 years ago, a little over that, because classical science, our three-dimensional world, does not explain how everything works. Quantum physics can do that. And therefore, I come up with my book.
Eventually, the laws of physics break down, and science cannot answer its own questions anymore.
That's right. You have to go elsewhere. You have to get into physics, right? And that sounds difficult for some people because all they can understand is what they've been taught and what they've been raised with and what their reality is due to the environment they've been brought up in. Mm-hmm. And that creates your reality. That's why we all have different opinions.
You know, going back to the language, I wanted to ask you guys, did you guys ever think about taking phrases out of what you got out of Ron's recording and maybe going up to the Syria campsite and regurgitating some of those phrases to see if they would ever respond back?
That's all I did. Every time we've been up there, I took all 75 pages of my transcripts, and me and my son, or myself, if Stephen wasn't there, I'd go out and stand on a rock and I would just shout out phrases from the transcripts. As well, and I would intermix it with other languages. I would use Persian and Russian and Spanish and English and a few lines that I know from Native American.
And then he would start singing it. Then he would start singing in Scotch.
Yeah, and of course, Ron always, I would come down from those little sessions up there, and Ron would say, he would tease me and say, "Scott, how do you know you're not shouting out some kind of a Sasquatch mating call?" I said, "Well, I don't know, you know, but that would be pretty scary." we did that all the time.
Well, I did. We did that
they can have no doubt that we were trying to communicate with them. Now, what we were saying, I mean, we could have been saying, you know, pretty threatening things and not know it.
Did you ever get anything to respond back?
Not linguistic stuff. We'd get weird. For instance, one time we were up there. I had had my drum up there, and I was playing it with an Irish beat. Boobada, boobada, boomada, 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 boom. And we were there one morning, and we heard what Ron described as woodpeckers coming from three different areas surrounding us. One area would go boom, boom, boom. Then the next area, boom, boom, boom. Then the next area, boom, 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 from triangulated around us, so that if you put them all together, these, quote, woodpeckers were mimicking the sound of my drum.
I think one time, Scott,
no, we never.
There was one time when I think it was just like your drum, if I remember
absolutely.
Correctly.
Yes.
And unless a woodpecker is trying to mimic you, well, it might have been something else.
Yeah.
But what we say is what I say.
Well, it was not woodpecker. It was like it was supposed to sound like woodpeckers, but it was not woodpeckers.
We don't think. We never did see. Until you can see, until you can see what makes a sound, you never can say what makes a sound. But you can only assume.
If they were woodpeckers, they were the most intelligent, musical, and probably Irish woodpeckers that
Irish.
They had a green stripe around their heads, so red.
Yeah,
it really is a fascinating topic, especially when you start getting deep into the topic, because there is some sort of weird language that these things have, and what it is, I don't know. And it's so hard. The best for me, I guess, because, you know, I'm not in Scott's, I don't have the resume Scott does. But for me, when I listen to, I try and ask the person that was there, you know, like Ron or an eyewitness, you know, what do you think was going on? And there was one recently, and I've had this from past private conversations over the phone. I don't know if you guys have ever heard this before, but this is about the 20th time I've heard this, where they will say it was chanting as it was coming up towards the camp in a really low, really low voice, not like a loud chant, almost like it was. You hear religious guys do it. They'll say almost like say the same, whether it's in Italian or whatever, they'll say the same phrase over and over and over and over again. And it sounds like a chant. Have you guys heard of that, or have you guys experienced that? Or
let me tell you that there's one spot on Ron's tape where I believe it's either a female or a very young one that is, you could call it a chant, but it's very sing-songy. Where, and I don't know exactly what I'm talking about, where going, the wackle. And then you'll hear the male go, wackle. And then she'll go, the wackle. Very, very slow and melodical. Again, I believe that they were doing it slow, either for the purpose of entertaining Ron or attempting to communicate with him.
Boy, I wish I knew what they were trying to say, or what they were saying that I didn't understand. I swear I should have had my mind open better. You know, if we could redo some of the things from the past, we'd do them a lot differently. Oh, a lot of things I would have done differently that night if I'd have known what I know now, and not underestimate what I was dealing with, because these things are unique, very unique, and it's going to be quite an interesting event when we discover what they really are and what they really represent. And we'll have our ideas about that, but there's a big picture to this thing that I think is not being looked at.
Yeah, and I think Scott hit it on the head earlier. You know, you almost hear like a different vocal. You almost hear like multiple vocal cords when you hear them, especially when you hear them scream. You'll hear where it sounds like five or six notes all wrapped up in one. And it's going up and down, up and down, up and down, but it's one long scream. It's not like how we would scream. Their vocal cords are very, very powerful, but it almost seems non-human what they can do with their vocal cords and how they can articulate.
Wes, I think it is non-human to the degree that their nuclear DNA, whatever it represents, is non-human. And, really, how do they make the metallic sounds I hear? If they're doing that with their vocal mechanism, they pretty much have to have more than two vocal cords, which is really unique if that's true. And if they have several vocal cords, they could maybe make these metallic sounds. That night when I had in 2011, that I write about in my last book, the metallic sounds came in just after the chatter at 10 o'clock I heard, after the one tromping around my tent there that night. At 4 o'clock that morning, which I wasn't sleeping, by the way, here's this real metallic type. I can't even describe it, but it wasn't normal. And how do they make those sounds? There's sounds up there we've heard that there's no explanation for them other than they either mass hypnotize us or they're making the sounds. But those sounds are coming out of their vocal mechanism. It's very, very, very unique, and I'd like to get more into that sometime. But
I agree. You know, I think
that's how they're doing it.
You hear, and I don't know if you've heard of this before, Ron and Scott, but I've had eyewitnesses that said it sounded like a forklift backing up. And I remember this one witness I had on the show one time. He had encounters around his house. He goes out one night, and he's like, "Yeah, it sounds like a forklift's backing up." And he goes, unless that forklift was 20 feet away in the brush, he goes, I don't know. It's not that the sound really traveled. And I said, well, is there any warehouses nearby? And he goes, yeah, about 25 miles away, there's a warehouse where they do back up forklifts. All you know, that beep, beep. And that's what this thing was doing. But I've actually been out to a property, too, where they recorded. It sounds like a train. You know, the train whistle. There's no train tracks around for almost 100 miles. And they have this recorded. It's not quite perfect. It almost sounds like a mimic of a train whistle, but it's so loud and so powerful. There's no way a human could have done that. And it was so close to a train whistle to where, unless someone's been, you know, like Scott could go out there and mimic it, no one's going to be able to go out there and mimic this. But the nearest train tracks were 100 miles away. And so you do hear reports, Ron, of what you're talking about with that metallic sound.
Well, right outside our shelter, we heard a car door slam. You tell me how that happens. I mean, this was in the 70s, but what? There's not even, you're 8 miles back in the wilderness. There's certainly no truck outside. There are no car parked outside, but you hear that slam. And another time when Larry Johnson, one of the guys was up there, he heard what he thought was a herd of horses coming down the ridge right behind our shelter, Scott. We'd all been out walking, hunting, I think we were. He was the first one back, and while he's there by himself, he heard that. And he didn't know what to think about that. He didn't know where to go with it because there's no horses up there. That time when you said we heard cowbells, Scott, you remember we looked very carefully all around there looking for a cow tracks. And
the thing was, we had barely dropped our packs off, and Stephen was with us that time, my son, and we had no sooner sat down to rest because it's an all day thing just getting up there, and we were exhausted. We no sooner sat down than I would estimate 40, 50 yards directly west from our camp, we hear this very loud, very clear clang, clang, clang. Exactly like a cowbell. And me and Stephen jump up and we look at Ron and say, what the hell is that? And Ron says, well, sounded like a cowbell. There must be cows up here. Said, we've seen cows before. I said, Ron, that's not a cowbell. There's no way there's a cow that came up that ridge the way we just came up all day.
Unless he's part goat. Maybe he's part goat.
Yeah. But then we no sooner got over that. Less than 10 minutes later, it was more like 6 or 7 minutes later, directly east, directly on the other side of our camp, approximately the same distance away, we hear the same thing, clang, clang, clang. And then Stephen, again, are like, that's not a cow.
You know, ranchers.
There's no way that's a cowbell.
Ranchers
There's
will.
No way that a cow, even if it wasn't a cow, he could not have walked that distance. Clear to the opposite side of the camp without making any sound, and then suddenly you hear exactly the same metallic sound, clang, clang, clang.
We don't think it was a cow, but that's what it sounded like, and I think that's the way they can communicate with each other sometimes is by these off-the-wall sounds. Ranchers will put a cowbell around about every third cow when they run them loose like that out in the BLM land. And I think these things probably can mimic that sound. They can mimic just about anything else they want to. So,
and I think, Wes, I think sometimes they just have fun messing with our minds.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, no doubt about
it. Some of the things we've experienced, I think they just do it just to laugh at, these tiny little hairless apes that run around thinking that we can understand them.
They think that we think we're smarter than them, and that's
probably
true.
Well,
we do, don't we?
Well, we think we do, but that's our reality.
Yeah, it's.
But I just wonder if they haven't evolved a little further than we have.
Yeah, well, it makes you wonder. You know, you look at the way the world's going today, and you do hear them mimic a lot of different noises. I know. When I was in Texas, you would hear, like you described, Scott, earlier, and I know Ron's talked about it, but the owl sound. And I remember the guy stopped me and said, listen. And I said, yeah, that's an owl. You know, I was thinking, these guys are a bunch of kooks, man. That's an owl. And the more he's like, no, listen. And he was kind of shining his light and pointing his finger around. And it slowly went from an owl sound into almost like that first recording I played, where it sounds like two monkeys fighting over a banana. I mean, it almost went into that type of vocalization. So I think you're right. I think that they do different noises like this to make you go, oh, that's a cougar, or oh, that's an owl, or oh, that's just a train, and just keep moving along. And I don't know if it's because they want to screw with us or if it's, their way of covering themselves.
They do mess with you. When I say mess with you, they'll toy with you too, Like, I can just imagine what they were thinking while we set up these camera traps up there trying to get a picture years ago. Couldn't trick them. We tried so many times to trick them. And why we were allowed to catch their vocalizations on recordings, I don't know. But we did. and very lucky. Maybe it's just so we can talk on this show tonight, you know. Wes, I don't know, but there's something going on with them.
I think there's no way you can trick them. You can't trick them.
Yeah, it seems very difficult. Seems very difficult. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on the show and talking about the – and Scott, thank you so much for coming on. Ron, thank you so much for coming on and talking.
My pleasure.
I really enjoyed it, guys, and I know you guys have talked this to death, but I appreciate you guys, you know, taking the time to come on. And
it's kind of cathartic, Wes. It's really kind of cathartic for us, I think. You know, you don't get tired of talking about it because I think in a way we need to.
Yeah, and you got a good listening audience, Wes, and I appreciate you inviting us on because we love to talk about it. That's what we do. I mean, that's what I do. Scottsdale works for a living. I kind of quit a long time ago. But it's fun for me, and it's exciting, and it's my passion, and I'm happy and honored that you have us on.
No, the honor was mine, guys. The honor was mine. Thank you again, Ron. Thank you again, Scott. And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. I will see you guys next time.
This is my home. This is